Things were just too quiet in Jetland. Welcome in. It is the Jets Collective. My name is Jake Asman alongside BT, Brandon Tierney from BT Unleashed, and of course ESPN's Rich Cimini. Guys, we thought this would be a quiet episode. We thought this would be an episode where post minicamp, what would we be talking about? And well, we now have a legal situation involving the Jets starting quarterback. As always, we're presented by Prize Picks. Appreciate everyone who's a part of the Jets Collective. Rich, BT, how we feeling following minicamp and now a Geno situation that we will break down the latest?
Pretty good. Rich, how are you? Any softball today, Richie?
No, tomorrow, actually. Thanks for asking. We've been rained out a lot lately, so we actually haven't played in a couple of weeks, but tomorrow we have a doubleheader.
Stretch out those hammies, you know, playing two.
But I'm looking forward to this episode. There's a lot of stuff we got to get into here with all the a little newsier than we anticipated.
No doubt. Before we get into any of it, I just want to shout this out at the start of the show because a bunch of people reached out after last week's episode. Gangrene Beach Club is coming up on July 11th. Wayne Krabet will be there. The three of us will be appearing at the first ever event at HQ2. $25 for tickets. You just go to gangrenebeachclub.com. And a bunch of Jets Collective listeners wanted to know, do you have to pay for a separate ticket if you want to meet Wayne? No, it's all inclusive. You can hang out with one of the great Jets ever, BT, Rich, Fireman Ed, name a Jet reporter or content creator. We're all going to be in the same spot. Again, it's going to be a lot of fun, so I wanted to shout this out at the start of the episode. You get your tickets right now at gangrenebeachclub.com. All right, Rich, where do we stand in regards to the Geno Smith assault allegations? This story, of course, started gaining some traction late Sunday on Father's Day, of course, and I know you spoke with the Davie Police Department. So as things currently stand on Wednesday afternoon, June 24th, where are we at with the Geno situation?
Yeah, just as I was getting home from the U.S. Open on Sunday night, I checked my phone and someone had sent me a copy of the video that went viral. And so, that required a lot of digging and, you know, police work, which you hate to do as a sports reporter, but it is part of the job. And as of right, and it's a weird story because initially the police said that the case was closed. They were just reviewing it almost in a procedural sense. But then the next day they do an about face and they say upon further review, it almost sounded like instant replay in the NFL. Upon further review, the detectives are looking into this case and it is an active case. That's where it stands right now. No one has been arrested. No one has been charged. This is purely detectives reviewing it, investigating it. I checked in with the league office, got back to me today, actually just before we came on the air. So they are aware of the matter, according to a league spokesman. They've been in contact with the Jets, which is procedural. It's what you have to do when something like this goes on. So I'm hesitant to cast stones here because we don't know the facts yet. We haven't gotten a police report. They're not going to release it until the matter is concluded. I've tried to dig out the report and the 911 call. They've been putting up roadblocks. But right now, that's where it stands. It's in the very early stages of an investigation.
Listen, the NFL's got their process, and Rich just outlined that here. I think the easiest thing to do is, in the court of public opinion, to jump to an opinion and jump to a hot take. I think that that's reckless. I'm certainly not about to do that with a legal issue. As Rich just said, I'm with you on that. I mean, the one optically, it obviously doesn't mesh well. I mean, things were going very well for the Jets there from a football point of view. And, you know, I mean, Geno's last incident was getting popped in the face by a teammate when he was a Jet. And then basically for 10 years, he found maturity. And again, these are just allegations. We all know that. I'm not, you know, saying that he did it. I don't know. But it is a little ironic in the depressing sense that, you know, the moment he comes back to the Jets, after basically a decade of living and working and flourishing as a human being for over a decade, that this is dropped at his doorstep. And, you know, the thing that you must do, because nobody's going to do it for you, you've got to fight for your character. You've got to fight for your integrity. We weren't there. We don't know what happened. Eventually, we will find out. And if Geno did something wrong, then Geno's either going to go to jail or Geno's going to be suspended. And if this is a made-up story, then she's going to be sued, and that's going to take its course. But I don't really know what else to add to this here, Jake, except that you hope it's not true, and you hope that the child's okay. Let's add that as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And just, you know, doing some digging on this, I actually spoke to a couple of police officers on my YouTube show about this, and you know, basically the fact that there were no arrests right away, if there was any signs of domestic violence, they would have to put the cuffs on Gino. That's like pretty state standard, regardless whether it's New Jersey or Florida, from my understanding. And she says in the call that, you know, Gino, quote, beat her ass. But if she couldn't produce any evidence of actual, you know, brutality that occurred, I think everything is up in the air and it's certainly questionable. Again, no arrests were made, and it did feel like, okay, this is a closed thing. They're going to file a report, and then it's open again. So I don't really know what the disconnect there was. Obviously, none of us know, and you hope, you know, Gino didn't do anything wrong. And if none of this is true, Gino could prove that. But the whole thing is just crazy to be coming out now. And is it almost better that it's happening now because you still have about 5 weeks till training camp? Or is it worse that it's coming out now because it's like the only big NFL story going on? So I think there's like two sides of it from that angle as well.
I think most fans are looking at this from a football perspective. And of course, BT just hit at the end there. The most important thing is the welfare of the child. You know, right. That's the most important thing. So let me stress that. But from a football perspective, I think Jet fans are wondering, could this impact Geno's availability? And typically in a situation like this, even let me stress this, hypothetically, if he were charged and this did go through the, you know, this was adjudicated, it would take a long time for that process to take place. He could fall under the personal conduct policy by the NFL, but I do not believe that would impact him for this season. That likely would be for next year. So because we know how these, you know, the lawyers get continuances and so on and kick the can down the road. And so I would think it would likely be an impact the following season. But right now, this is all we have. All I know is the woman, she claims to be she's an ex-girlfriend. I believe they were high school sweethearts, if I'm not mistaken. And somehow they still have, you know, she's still in Gino's life. That's about all I know at this point. As we know, guys, in social media, cell phone videos can be very misleading. So unless you were there, I would think, knowing the kind of, Gino lives in a gorgeous, you know, a huge house down there in Davie, Florida. I would think there's security camera on the outside. Mm-hmm. So maybe, you know, they could look at that security camera either to exonerate Gino or to get some evidence. So that part is still unknown. I'm in touch with the police every day, a couple of times a day, to try to get the latest on it. But that's the latest I have right now.
Yeah, and listen, you don't know when, like at what point, if something did happen, when the video was actually started here. You know, from what I was able to deduce, he seemed as if he was trying to de-escalate it, walking away and trying to make sure that it didn't get past a certain point. Now, maybe it did get past a certain point, then he realized something went seriously awry, so he was really trying to make sure it didn't go any further. I don't know. That's obviously all speculatory on my point and on my part. But Jake, to answer your question here, you know, the only NFL story from a timing perspective, because we're in the business of sports content, obviously, I would have to think that this is probably beneficial now, where at least it gives, like, let's just say worst case scenario, whatever that would be for Gino, and then the NFL would act, the Jets would act. At least they've got time to figure this out. Now, you could make the case that best case scenario would have been months ago before they started install and OTAs and all that stuff before he actually got in the building. Either way, I mean, we're sitting here saying who's the backup quarterback. We don't even know that answer. You know, we got into Sorsby. We'll get back into him in a minute. A lot about Cade Klubnik. We kicked the tires on Russell Wilson. I mean, we don't know who the backup is yet. If there's an issue with Gino as the starter, I mean, then they've got massive problems here. So hopefully it resolves itself swiftly, and hopefully it didn't happen.
Here's a question I have, Rich. How different is this situation with Gino from what's going on with Josh Jacobs and the Packers? Because he was, you know, facing allegations of domestic violence, and he was still out there at OTAs and minicamp, and the NFL has said it's a legal matter, and they're not going to suspend him until they get some clarity from the legal system. Like, would the Jets have a different stance than what the Packers' stance was? Like, if Gino, if this is still an open investigation and we get the training camp, is Gino going to be able to still be out there if there's no news on where things currently stand with this investigation?
I would think they would come to a conclusion in this investigation rather quickly. You know, I can't imagine this dragging on past this week.
Really?
So now the Jacobs situation, that actually, if I recall correctly, he got that. There's a different process in the state of Wisconsin there. I think they don't have enough to charge him right now. Wasn't it before a grand jury or something like that? I don't know if they have enough to charge him. But you know what? I've dealt with this situation before where there's personal conduct issues off the field. The team usually lets the league handle it. So I cannot imagine the Jets taking any sort of disciplinary action against Geno Smith unless something egregious, just like totally egregious, comes out on videotape. Then perhaps. But right now, I think they will let the court system run its due process. And then at that point, the league usually steps in and decides whether to discipline the player. And the team usually lets the league handle it. And I should also add this. He doesn't have to be charged or convicted for the league to take action. The league does its own investigation and could decide that even though he was exonerated by the local authorities, under our purview, it's a violation of the public personal conduct policy.
Yep.
So we're going to do this or suspend him or do whatever. So the league operates as its own entity in these matters.
I was going to kind of go there. I mean, I think it's all interconnected on this level, Rich. I think you laid out well, too, where let's face if it's deemed egregious enough by the Jets, right, and the Jets want to flex on that personal conduct code, then if it's truly egregious, I don't think the Jets would have to do that because the NFL would do that for them.
Yeah.
So I think if it's really, truly up to interpretation, did it happen? What's the severity? There's no formal charges, nothing that's sticking. You would have to think that the team and the league would be on the same page here. I think that's pretty basic stuff, right?
Yeah. Like I just think a lot. Yeah. I mean, yeah, I think so. I mean, usually, like I said, the team usually defers to the league on the matter. The league will be the judge and jury in this case. You know, once he gets past the local jurisdiction, then the league has their own jurisdiction and they'll make a decision on it. A lot of times the league will just defer to wait till the matter's adjudicated by the courts, you know? So like I said, it's going to take a while and it could end in an hour. I mean, the police could put out a statement saying we investigated it. No charges will be filed. Case closed. That could happen. That could very well happen. In which case this is done, you know, and the league will say, okay, that's fine by us. No penalty. So, you know, we're just waiting right now.
And let's be very blunt, guys. I mean, on the spectrum of possibility or the scale of possibility, it could be anything as egregious and as criminal as he struck her and he's going to jail and he's done in the NFL, or it's a made up claim and it's a money grab. I mean, or it could be something somewhere in between.
Yeah.
I mean, we don't know, but definitely a little bit of a curveball into the Jets offseason for sure.
Yeah,
I don't know if you guys saw this, but the New York Post published, I guess, police body cam footage of a traffic stop that Geno had back in March, and people are trying to equate, you know, him being pulled over and not having his license on him and not having, you know, the proper paperwork for either the Lambo or the Rolls Royce that he was driving in the video. And saying, well, because this happened, that means he could be guilty of assault. And I think you can say whatever you want about Geno Smith. Him being maybe a jerk to a police officer in a traffic stop does not mean that he assaulted someone. So I think people need to not equate the two things that are now starting to come out as the media kind of swarms to follow this story with Geno Smith.
To be blunt, I thought that was tabloid bullshit. You know, I really thought that was that happens to a lot of people. I mean, and Jake is right to equate it with a potent, like an alleged assault. Look, I did a lot of background work on Geno when he was with the Jets, when he got back to the Jets. He's had multiple traffic stops, you know, and just minor stuff, not having a license, insurance, nothing major. Mm-hmm. They got body cam and they posted it. That's the tabloid world we live in right now. You know, I didn't like it particularly.
Yeah, I'd like to see some things protected a little bit more. I also I don't think he came across as great in that video for sure. I mean, I've got no problem saying that, but we've all had moments where you think you're unfairly pulled over. If you're on the fence where you think you're unfairly pulled over or it's just not a good start in terms of a conversation with the officer, if you're on the fence about Geno as a player, that's one thing. All right, that's going to resolve itself once they get on the field, if he does. If you're on the fence about Geno as a person, not the best look for him in terms of maturity and, you know, kind of the whatever the pecking order of when you get pulled over is. But certainly not enough to like take it a step further and say,
yeah,
well, he didn't have that. He didn't know. Now he's obvious. Some people will do that because they're idiots and we can't help those people.
Yeah. I mean, this is the tabloid world we live in, and you know, it's a little bit of piling on, but you know, it's not a good look for Gino. He has not addressed any of this publicly on social media. Certainly he'll be asked about it when he reports to training camp. It's July 28th. We'll talk to him either on July 28th or July 29th, the first practice. So he's going to be asked about it, and we'll see how it goes then.
Do you think he should get out in front of it here, Rich, before you guys convene for training camp to, if there is some sort of resolution, wouldn't it maybe behoove him and the Jets to kind of get it out there now? And then I know you guys will still ask about it, but
it's interesting. Do you remember back in Geno 1.0 when he had that incident on the plane? You know, he was asked to leave a plane because he got in an argument with the flight attendant over his headphones or whether he was talking. I think it was after his first or second year, uh-huh, and it became a huge story. At that particular time, I remember he did hire a public relations person who was doing some back channel work, you know, trying to smooth things over with the media. In this particular case, I don't think, at least not to my knowledge, that he's hired anyone, you know, public relations wise, but he's probably just taking the advice of his lawyer and laying low until the matter is resolved. That would be my guess.
You're watching the Jets Collective. Hit the like button. Make sure you're subscribed to the channel. We had over 4,000 subscribers on the YouTube channel. So thanks to everyone who's tuned in each and every week to the show. If you ever missed the show live on YouTube, you can also get it on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or iHeart. Just search Jets Collective and it comes right up. Rich in a scenario.
Hey, Jake, hold on, Jake. Is that the first expletive that Richie dropped on the show? We got to get a scoreboard here. Is that one for Rich?
It might have been. All right, I'll drop a dollar in the curse jar, you know, so sorry.
I like it.
No, there's no kangaroo right? Court here, I promise you.
You could be unfiltered here, man. This is not a radio.
It's not usually my style, but whatever.
I was just going to say this. In obviously the worst case scenario, no one's rooting for this, but let's say Gino, his availability comes into question for regular season games. You would think the Jets have to add another quarterback, right? But would it just be as simple as Cooper Rush, or is it, hey, let's call the Cardinals and call and find out about Jacoby Brissett, or let's see if the Raiders would make Kirk Cousins available? Like, how dire would it be for the Jets if, let's say, Geno's availability to start the year, Rich, it comes into question?
Yeah, that would be dire because basically they'd be screwed. It would be akin to the 2023 season when Aaron Rodgers gets hurt in the first series. You know, they'd be stuck. And so I do not think that's going to happen. I truly don't believe that his availability will be called into question. I still think they possibly could add a veteran quarterback at some point. Now, we asked Aaron Glenn about that at the conclusion of minicamp last week. I asked him specifically, you know, are you happy with your backup situation and would you look for a veteran? And his words were basically, and I'm quoting fairly accurately, he goes, we're just going to let these guys compete. So I'll take him at his word. I think they'll go into training camp, and I think they want Klubnik to win this job. It's either Klubnik or Zappe. Brady Cook is a non-factor, and they're hoping Klubnik can do it. Unfortunately, he missed a couple of weeks. It would have been nice to see him get all those reps in minicamp and the end of OTAs, but he didn't. And if they see a couple of weeks of training camp where it's just not happening for those guys, then, you know, then maybe they go out and make a move for a backup. But in Jake's, you know, doomsday scenario where Geno is not available, then yes, they would have to go out and make a different kind of move to try to get like a quasi starting quarterback.
What's two steps beyond dire? Catastrophic? I mean, because that's where it would be at this point for job security. I mean, there is no doubt at some point that the Jets would have to move mountains to get somebody that's remotely competent and preferably somebody that's played a little bit with Frank Reich, as you know, that understands the style, understands the playbook here. I mean, I can't even, it's June. All right. I can't even, and I think Rich's instincts are right. I don't see Geno missing time, but I don't know. Nobody does. But if it is dire and it is catastrophic, I mean, then everything just switched on a dime. I mean, it goes from optimistic to interesting possibilities to a moribund, death march for everybody in that building. Let's call for what it is, man.
Well, they're marching for Arch, BT, in that scenario.
Well, I
think Tim Boyle's available, so they could go out and get Tim Boyle or Trevor Siemian or something like that. But
Timmy Boyle.
Let's just hope for everyone's sake it doesn't come to that, because no one wants to see that. You want to see competitive football, and you want to see what Geno Smith can do. And let's let due process occur. But like I said, I'd be very, very surprised if something impacts his availability.
This super chat is on point to what we were just discussing, so we'll put it up right now. It's from Doc Jetfan, who's a great listener to the show. He says, Geno's a placeholder, but these episodes beg the question, is this the guy you want mentoring a young QB drafted in 2027, innocent until proven guilty, but awful optics for a $10 billion franchise again?
Rich, you want to take it, Rich?
Yeah, that's a fair question. That's a totally fair question. We'll find out. I mean, this is a one-year audition for Geno. He's got a one-year left on his contract. And if things go really well and he shows really good leadership, the Jets could absolutely have him back next year as a mentor for the next guy. But we have to go through that process. This staff doesn't know Geno Smith. Like, we know the fans know him, and we know him from the last time. This staff is just getting to know him. Frank Reich said the other day he had never met Geno before. Yep. And so, I mean, he's been very impressed with him. But so this is going to be a learning experience for both sides. And, you know, if this sort of stuff, if he does show a lack of leadership and mentorship throughout this year, then certainly the Jets would have to think twice before bringing him back next year.
Yep. I mean, the operative timeline there is 2027. It's not pressing right now. Like, let's just say, you know, this was 2027 and they drafted Arch or whomever, and Geno was here for the first year. I think that would be a better question, because it's already happening. Like, all right, here's a guy who, you know, maybe isn't quite the leader that you would want or whatever it might be. But that's not the case. The Jets have a year, provided he plays football this year, to view him day to day, how he comports himself, how he is watching film, which I believe we all think is going to be very diligent. Pete Carroll's raved about him. Frank Reich's raved about him. The young players have raved about him. Like, you know, I think in a lot of ways it's ideal, because, you know, he's had some really high moments where he got some MVP votes a couple of years ago. He got popped in the face by a teammate and was embarrassed and banished from his first franchise and everything in between. So I think that the resolve and the battle tested and how calloused he is to the ups and downs of the NFL will be great for the next quarterback, provided Geno's not in trouble with the law.
I think that's totally fair. Well, speaking of being in trouble, perfect segue here. Brandon Sorsby, so much debate on this show between the three of us on whether or not the Jets should get involved in the NFL supplemental draft with Brandon Sorsby. I guess the three of us didn't consider the possibility of the NFL just saying, we're not going to have a supplemental draft. So, BT, since you were such a big advocate of the Jets being aggressive to land Sorsby, what was your initial reaction when the news went down that there's no supplemental draft at all?
I was surprised. I mean, let's face it. I mean, this thing goes back to 1977, and we don't know a ton about it. We've talked about Bernie Kosar and Chris Carter and some other names, Dave Brown, et cetera, from Duke. But, you know, it's just a lot of little snippets and snapshots throughout history. There's not a lot of, like, depth to the conversation of the supplemental draft, because we don't really deal with it that often. It just popped up here, Terrell Pryor, somewhat recently as well. Listen, I actually give the NFL credit here, which is completely independent of what I was saying. Now, Rich, I know that you had some news where you didn't think that the Jets would, and you said that on the show, but then you also wound up reporting that. Great job by you, which is separate from what I wanted them to do. Like, there's the reporting aspect, and then there's my opinion, and I believe you, Rich. I absolutely believe you, but that's disappointing to me, because I've been, ever since we launched this show, and I'm not alone here, but I have really lauded Muji, his forward thinking. You know, how you know, between the margins, the big swings with Quinnen and Sauce. To me, to not be prepared to at least go with a third rounder, even though it's not going to happen, I get that. That's not the point. That's a little worrisome to me, because that I thought they would be all in to flip over every rock to get a quarterback. And I believe Rich is reporting, so that's contrary to what I wanted, and it's disappointing to hear that. But I think it's smart by the NFL. We're not dealing with this nonsense. You figure it out. You messed up. We're laying out.
Yeah, it's funny. I was talking to someone like a week ago, and this person said, don't be surprised if there's not a supplemental draft. You know, the NFL might try to make a statement here. I was like, come on, there's got to be a supplemental draft. The kid applied, blah, blah, blah. And I still thought there would be one, and there wasn't. So, yes, I was very surprised there wasn't. I understand the league's position. I'm with BT. I support the league on that one. I actually think it'll be better for the kid in the long run. But it sounds like he's going to try to sue the NFL now, and so there's going to be more legal machinations going on for the next few months or however long. So if I were him, I would just chill out, you know, try to rehab your image over the next year. You know, he can only play in the CFL or the UFL or a non-NCAA school. So chances are he won't play, and then he'll join the pre-draft process next year and try to perform as best he can. And if he's as good as he thinks he is, you know, he could still go in the second or first round next year. Unfortunately, he won't have a season, you know, to play with, to put on his resume. So that's what I would do. I think it'll be better for him, you know, in the long run. And since we last talked last week, I mean, I could say I would even more double down, having talked to like three people who kind of were around the situation and thought they knew what the Jets were going to do. I'm absolutely convinced they would not have put a bid in on Sorsby. I know I said that last week. I'm even more sure of it now. I don't think they would have. And I think, I don't even know who would have, you know, if the Cardinals would have, it would have been interesting to see who would have done it. I would be shocked if anyone put a second rounder in on him. So it's a moot point now, you know. I just don't think the Jets were going to go there, BT.
Listen, I'm conceding that. I think you nailed that, Rich. I still think that everybody would have been at the pro day. I guarantee every team would have been there. Otherwise, you're just not doing your due diligence. And again, I can use the word guarantee. It's meaningless now. I strongly believe that somebody would have put in at least a third. I think a second, but we don't know that answer. Although we seem to have the answer with the Jets not being okay with doing that as per Rich's reporting. I've got a really dumb question, all right? And either one of you guys could attack this. So let's say Muji's at the gym. He's at the gym and he's not working out at the Jets facility. He's working out at a Crunch Fitness or whatever he's doing. And he sees some monster, 6'5", 350. He's doing box jumps. He's doing shuttle runs. He's like, man, starts talking to the guy. Hey, did you play? Yeah, I played a year. He's like 25 years old. Yeah, I played a year at JUCO and I failed out. And he's like, hey, why don't you come work out for the Jets? Just follow me on this. Comes, works out for the Jets. They like what they see. They bring him in and they sign him. Whether or not he makes it, that's a different story. Why can't a team just sign Sorsby without drafting him?
Well, he has to have gone. A player had to have been eligible for the draft to be signed as an undrafted free agent.
But there's been so many stories, even in the NBA, guys like Anthony Mason and John, like, you're telling me that there's never been anybody in they bring guys over from Australia who play rugby. You're telling me there's not a way to circumvent this?
Well, how about the strike in 87? They were signing replacement guys off the street.
You know? There you go.
Guy from the supermarket, you know, checkout, you know, to come in and play. Yes. Like, literally.
I know.
So, you know, it's a really good question. If something like that happened, I could try to find out the answer. I guess it would depend how much eligibility he has left and if he expired his eligibility. I don't know. That's a really good question. I'm sure it's happened in the league. If you give me long enough, I might be able to think of a Jet example where a guy kind of came off the street and it's an interesting question, but you know, this player, you know, in Sorsby's case, he's not eligible to sign because he has not been deemed eligible for the draft process. So he's kind
of, but he's not getting drafted though. You would just be signing him.
Well, next year he could get drafted.
No, I know. But I'm saying, if somebody wanted to give him $1,000 to come show up to minicamp, or you know, he might get cut. Do I think it's really plausible? No, but I feel like there's been so many success stories. This guy was bagging groceries. This guy was a health and fitness coach. This guy was a mechanic. And then,
but were they in college the previous year though? Like, I think there's an eligibility thing in the NFL that there must be some sort of rule in place to prevent that exact scenario you outlined from happening for a guy who was supposed to be in college football this year.
Maybe. I'm just asking. Probably not, but hey, if there's a loophole, go get him.
I mean, you have to have played three seasons in college. I mean, that's the rule.
I know. So, he was at Indiana for a couple of years. He was at Cincinnati.
Yeah.
He's played.
No, I'm saying if like a guy off the street, a guy in the gym, you know, he wouldn't be eligible if he didn't have three seasons of college. Yep. He probably wouldn't be eligible. It has to be at least three seasons.
Rich, let me just follow up on your reporting on Sorsby. Is the Jets' line of thinking, hey, we don't need to get our long-term answer right now because we have the three first-round picks? Or do they look at Sorsby and just think it was not worth bringing him in and dealing with all that would come with it, knowing that we have Geno, we traded up in the fourth round to add Klubnik, coaching staff needs to win games? Like, what was, in your determination, speaking with those in the know, the biggest factor in why they seemingly wouldn't place any sort of bid on Sorsby?
This is a little conjecture on my part, you know, because no one from the Jets is like calling me and telling me, you know, whether their Sorsby opinion. So this is just connecting dots and doing a little detective work. I think probably both, Jake, you know, both reasons, you know, still feeling pretty confident about their draft positioning for next year in 27, being able to find a quarterback, and also probably not why, as I spoke, I quoted someone in my story, you know, on Sunday saying the Jets just didn't want to deal with it, you know, so I think they probably had some really strong feelings, much like the NFL does, about the whole gambling thing. And I mentioned that in my story, there would be a public relations fallout. Guys, it's the Jets. We know what it would have been like. It would have been a media circus if they brought this guy in. And I'm not saying it would have been on the level of Tim Tebow, because I'm not sure anything would rise to that level of circus-dom, if that's a word. It's not a word.
Yeah.
But it would have been a huge distraction. And not to say that was the primary reason. I just think maybe the Jets thought he needed another year of seasoning as a player in college. I'm sure they saw some upside, but again, just quoting the person I quoted in my story saying that I don't think they just wanted to deal with it. You know,
and that's like, but that's what disappoints me. And I hear you, Rich. I do. I believe you. I think you're as well sourced as anybody, but I don't want to hear that for a team that's trying to find a quarterback. The guy's 6'3". He's 235. He runs a 4.6 240. He's got a good arm. I'm not saying he's John Elway, but he's got an above average arm. And every scout, every pundit, doesn't mean they're going to be right, but every single person I flip on, ESPN, Fox, every article, hey, at the minimum, he's going to be in the conversation for a first round pick next year. And he's very comparable in terms of skill set to all the other guys that went out this year. Well, not, I mean, you know, only Mendoza, but if Dante would have come out this year, certainly Klubnik. I don't get, like, you, I understand trying to avoid a firestorm when you're the Jets, but to operate under that is disappointing if there's a potential great answer. Take it on the chin. We are used to 24 in one day, boom, story's gone. All right, you bring him in the building, you ask him 100 questions, you move on, next story. Maybe I'm simplifying it, but it bothers me.
It's a complex, it's a very nuanced issue. I understand your desire to, like, you got to take as many swings as you can, right? Because you got to find a quarterback.
Yep.
I do think you need to take swings, but I think you have to be judicious about it. You can't sign everyone who comes across the radar. I mean, forget about the physical talent, which I think we'd all agree he probably has the physical talent to play in the league. There's so many intangible factors. How is he going to be accepted into the locker room? How is he going to handle New York as a market? How is he going to handle, if he were in the draft, a possible suspension where he's not allowed to come in the facility for, say, half the season or maybe a full season? How would he handle that? Would he have enough of a support staff to get him through that time period? There's so many other factors. I'm with the Jets on this. If in fact, they did not put in a bid, I would have been, like, supportive of that, because I just think, especially – they're not desperate. You know,
they're not desperate. They don't have a quarterback.
First round picks, they would have been desperate, but they're not desperate. And so I would have been supportive of the decision not to put in a bid on the guy. I think there's just too much baggage.
BT, we're desperate as fans, but Muji's looking at it like, my job is not on the line if I don't get my franchise quarterback right here, right now. I sold Woody Johnson on a plan where we have three first round picks to do it. We're building our roster, having the O-line in place, having the receivers in place, ready to go for the quarterback in 27. I just feel like they didn't feel, unless they were just in full bloom love with the guy, which I doubt they were. I just didn't, I'm not surprised at all that that's the Jets line of thinking. I agree with it too, to be honest.
Yeah, I get it. No, we disagree. That's fine. I mean, to me, like the first thing that Rich just said, like, you know, and I know that there's other elements here, like, how would he be accepted in the locker room? I mean, are we kidding each other here? I mean, there's guys who walk into locker rooms who are accused of rape, and charges get dropped, and we're gonna make this guy a leper because he bet. I know it was a lot of times. I get that, but fairly nominal amounts of bets for his team to win. Like we're gonna get him up at the. I'm not saying you, Rich. We're gonna get at the pulpit now and start, you know, chastise. Oh no, we're holier than thou. No, we can't have somebody who gambled on football, but we could have rapists and drug abusers and spousal abusers. Oh, are we kidding? What?
Yeah, I mean, I think Aaron Glenn, knowing him the way I do, I just, you hear him talk about culture a lot. I think he's trying to create a certain culture. He brought in a lot of leaders this offseason. We've talked about it ourselves on previous episodes, the Demario Davises, the Minkas, the guys like that, to come in and try to steady this ship and get it pointed in the right direction. I think he's very, very acutely aware of trying to get the culture right. And I mean, his mentor, Bill Parcells, always used to say, I don't want celebrity quarterbacks, you know, so I can't even imagine what he'd be thinking about. I don't want this kind of quarterback. I just don't think they would have wanted him in there. I don't think they thought the risk was worth the potential reward.
All right.
Again, it's me. That's me extrapolating certain things. You know, it's not like they're not announcing this.
Putting
out statements on it.
Yeah. Well, how about this for a transition? Let's just lean into it. We are presented by Prize Picks, baby. That's right. Prize Picks, 100% sponsor. They got to send you guys a hat. They were nice enough to send me a hat that I'm rocking on the show right now. I put this one together trying to, you know, get ready for week one. All three of us are going to be down in Nashville. So you take a look at the week one numbers of the two receivers from the Ohio State in this game. You got Carnell Tate, who was a top four pick by the Titans in the draft. And of course, Garrett Wilson, who's back from injury out there. $20 to win 60 over at Prize Picks with a two pick power play. Carnell Tate, 51.5 receiving yards. Garrett Wilson, 67.5 receiving yards. Rich, I'll start with you this week. You going more or less on both of the numbers for the top receivers in the matchup?
Yeah, I think this is going to be a really low-scoring game with two defensive-minded coaches. I'm going to go under on both of those. Carnell Tate, it would be his first NFL game. And Garrett Wilson, while I think he's certainly more capable of going over than Tate is going over his number, again, I think the Jets will be a run-oriented approach in this game, and this game might be like 17-14. So I'm going to go under on both.
Hopefully the Jets have the 17. I'm going to go over on both here. I get it. Good logic there, Rich. You know, I was saying this last week. Was it Brees? And I generally tend to go over here because, you know, it like when you do stuff like this, you've got to look at the number. Obviously, that's the literal thing, the first thing you look at. But also, like, okay, we anticipate a lower scoring game. But, like, if the Jets were to jump ahead by, you know, some decent numbers here by a couple of scores, well, then obviously, you know, you loosen up a little bit. You give them some yards, keep them in front of you, a little 12-yard reception here. You know, then move the sticks, but don't give up the touchdown. I just look at 51.5 for an immensely gifted player as a little bit too low to not go over it. Now, I might not touch it, actually, to be fair. I might look for a different number, but based on these two that Jay cooked up, I'm going over on both.
I'm going to split the difference here. Under on Tate, because I think it's his first game, and maybe Salah will do the thing he did with Garrett Wilson where he didn't start him week one, and we were all losing our collective minds when he was making all these plays against the Ravens in that opening game, and then he took over week two, and the rest is history for Garrett Wilson. So I'll say less on Tate because Salah will not learn from that mistake, and then Garrett Wilson will have a big week one. Geno throwing him the ball. Hopefully he finds the end zone a couple times. I'll go more on 67.5. Make your own picks for Jets-Titans. Any NFL-related game they have, plus they got the World Cup going on, UFC, Major League Baseball, pick against Met players. Sorry, Rich. And you can try and make some money over on Prize Picks. Use that code HMA. Shout out to Prize Picks for sponsoring our show. All right, so in honor of minicamp coming to a close, Rich Samidi fired off a tweet, stock up, stock down, some observations from Jets OTAs and minicamp on some players that stood out. So, Rich, before we even go there, though, Were you surprised that Aaron Glenn canceled the final day of minicamp? Because I know we had spoken the day before in our last episode that the Jets were actually going to be one of the rare teams that held a practice for all 3 days of minicamp. And then the day of the Knicks parade, Aaron Glenn changed his mind.
Yeah, I mean, yes and no. I mean, coaches cancel the last day all the time. So I thought that was a possibility going out there on Tuesday. But then it just seemed like they were really determined to get that third day in. So I guess, yes. In the end, I ended up being a little surprised. I know this is drives some Jet fans crazy. Oh, you know, they were 3-14. They need to be practicing. You know, I'm not too fired up about it. It's the coach giving his team a little reward for some hard work. And so he must have been pleased with the way things are going. So it's a little throw him a little carrot at the end, you know, like the last day of school, go ahead, go home.
Bring the donuts in, right?
I mean, I'm not too fired up about it. In the grand scheme of things, it's not like a training camp day. So it happens all the time in the league. I don't think it's a big deal.
Boy, you and I disagree on a lot. It's going to be interesting during the season here, Rich. I disagree. Not enough we're going to start ranting and raving, but you got to earn some latitude here to get the day off. What? I mean, all right, the Niners, the champion Seattle Seahawks, the Patriots, I mean, who are pretty with the Bills. That's for the Chiefs. I got you. All right, understood. The Eagles, but no, this is an old school mentality. I'm not giving them a damn thing until they earn it. I'm running them into the ground, and I'm creating a culture of expectation that we are busting ass until we break through. And when we break through, and if we break through, then you will earn a little respite. But until then, watch the parade on TV because your ass is in practice. That's how I would run practice, guys. I mean, maybe that's why I'm also not a coach at that level, but they don't deserve the day off for what?
Well, that's a pretty compelling case you make there.
Day off.
I think they should have had a practice.
Off last year.
Agreed. I think they should have had practice. I'm also not going to lose my mind over it because, again, yeah. I didn't even realize they didn't have it because I was down at the parade trying to enjoy, you know, the championship that the Knicks finally gave us. But I was surprised just because it felt like Aaron Glenn was like this no-nonsense, rah-rah coach, and after a 3-win season, he'd want the team to be out there and practice. My only issue is when fans say, oh, who cares? It doesn't matter. Then why do they do it? Like, if it doesn't matter, why do they do it? Like, they have the next 5 weeks off. You couldn't just practice. Again, I don't want this to be, like, clipped. Oh, Jake Asman's fired up and killing Aaron Glenn for canceling. I just was surprised given it sounded like they were going to do it, and they won 3 games last year, as BT joked. They quit on the season. Why are they canceling practice?
There you go.
Yeah, I was a little surprised, too, but I'm not going to, you know, I'm not going to make a huge stink out of it. We'll see. You know, I certainly understand BT's argument. He's actually brought me over a little bit just to hear him talk.
Because
I really didn't feel that strongly about it one way or the other, to be quite honest. So,
were you on your way there, Rich, when they canceled it? Or they
no, I was actually home that day. I wasn't going to be able to make it out because of a personal thing. But so it didn't really matter to me one way or the other. we did talk to Aaron Glenn that day and asked him about it. And he just explained that he just thought they were doing good work and they were entitled to a day off. So
did he give them that day off last year? Probably not, right?
I don't think so. Okay. I can't remember exactly. He may have. I'm not sure.
I was going to say, though, I'm sure he probably thought they were having good reps last year as well. And look what they did. So, I mean, it's not always the best indicator what he thinks is happening in practice.
Well, he says they always have a great week of practice. So I always joke, well, no team practiced is better Wednesday through Friday than the New York Jets. They're the Chiefs of practicing every year.
I know fans hate that, and I get that part. I mean, no one wants to hear about the
practice. It's every coach. It's not even Aaron Glenn. Every Jet coach who was stunk during this 15-year playoff drought has used – anytime you have a great week of practice, you bet the opposite team. God. You know the Jets aren't winning that week.
One of these years, I want to hear a coach come out after the game and say, you know, we had a crappy week of practice and we played like it today. You know, that would be refreshingly honest. You know, that would be great.
That'd be outstanding. Rich, stock up, stock down, inspired by your tweet. Give the collective audience here some players that you thought stood out throughout OTAs and minicamp.
Well, we talked about him a lot in the beginning, Geno Smith. You know, I thought he performed well through OTAs and minicamp. You know, just keeping it on the field from what I saw, I looked like a guy who was in command, a guy who knew what he was doing, even though it's his fourth offensive system in 4 years. developed a nice chemistry with AD Mitchell, who is also one of my stock up players. In ESPN.com story, I named him the biggest surprise of the offseason. I think the Jets expected him to take a leap in the offseason. I think he exceeded what they expected. He's really solidified himself as the number two receiver. I think the vertical speed is something that will be beneficial to the Jets. Braylon Allen, another guy who was a stock up guy for me, just the fact that he's healthy, you know, and on the field after that knee injury last year, gained some weight. He claims it was muscle weight. He's up to 250 pounds, which puts him in the Derrick Henry weight class. He is a big, big man. And scary to think he's only like 21 or 22 years old right now.
He's young,
which is scary. So yeah. I think that was a thumbs up. He moved well. Who else did I have? I had Kingsley Enembare, who no one's talked about this offseason, and I guess I'm partly guilty of that as well. He just hasn't resonated with the media. We haven't even had a chance to talk to him yet, but I watched him. He's going to be playing a significant role on this defense as an edge player, along with Joseph Asai, another guy who's flown under the radar. And those will be your two primary edge players, along with David Bailey and Will McDonald. So those were some of the ups. The downs, stock downs, were, the two quarterbacks, I thought Cook and Zappe did not perform well. And there was one other one I thought, I can't remember who I had in my stock down, but I had a couple of other players on my
Cade
stock.
Cade York. Down. I just pulled up
Cade, Cade, yeah, yeah, Cade York. A couple of hiccups there. This whole kicking. Oh, there we go. Yeah, and also Omar Cooper Jr., really impressive, you know, got a lot of quality reps. He's a good route runner, and we haven't even seen what he can do yet with the ball in his hands, and by that I mean with pads on, because that's supposedly his strength, you know, the run after the catch ability. So I'm excited to see that in training camp. Isaiah Williams, you know, he actually told us that he worked at a speed camp this offseason, worked out with some Olympic sprinters trying to create some long speed. I think we know that he has that short area quickness. He showed that on some of those punt returns, but he's trying to improve his long speed. And I'm curious to see, I know he's trying to crack that receiver rotation and get some reps there. That'll be interesting to see. Pons, I think, will end up being the starting nickel for them. And we talked about Enembare. And, and I think on the down, the stock down, I would include like the secondary as a group. It's a question mark for me. You know, we don't know who the other starter is at corner. I think you got Nashon Wright and Azaria Thomas working there. That's an open battle. The safety position, I think, is open. You got Minka and then, you know, I guess Andre Sisco. But to me, that doesn't really impress me too much. So to me, that's an open battle. So a lot of moving parts in the secondary. So that to me is a concern.
Rich, what do you see for Mason Taylor?
I think he was okay. I mean, I saw him. He had one drop in the end zone on one particular day. I think it was the first day of minicamp. We did not get a chance to speak to him. We requested him. Obviously, he's a guy you want to talk to because they drafted a player at his position in the first round. And I know Aaron Glenn has really high hopes for Mason Taylor this year. I still think he's going to be a big part of the offense. You're going to see a lot more 12 personnel this year with Sadiq and Ruckert. And Mason. So I'd be lying if I said that Mason had a spectacular mini camp. I think he was just, you know, falling in with the rest of them. But I do think he'll be pretty good this year.
I got one for you because I don't want to steal Rich's bit here because he just crushed a bunch of good stuff there. I'm gonna throw Frank Reich there stock up. I mean, think about this guy. I feel like every year we're like trying to discern, like, all right, what's the playbook gonna look like? All right, who's the adult in the room? All right, what are they going to run? Like, I just think every time he spoke, I thought he came with great conviction, great experience. It just gives you a sense of confidence that you know, somebody's in charge of the offense for once, that isn't trying to figure things out on the fly.
Yeah, that's a good one. I probably should have included him in a stock up. If I included coaches, he'd be a stock up guy. I heard from more than one player about his coaching style, how, and I think I used this term in one of the previous episodes, the player empowerment. There's a lot of feedback. It almost reminds me of the Knicks a little bit toward the end of the year, how with Cat and Brown, they had some back and forth to try to change his role. It sounds like Reich encourages that kind of feedback from the players. So I know Garrett Wilson's really happy.
Good.
I heard from the other receivers, they just like the ability to make suggestions. It's not to say they're not being coached and that, you know, that they're running the ship by themselves. You know, Reich is clearly in charge, but I think he's running more of a democratic situation. He's taking input and incorporating that into his philosophy. So you're right, BT. I think all the early reviews are pretty positive on Frank Reich.
I like that.
You think, guys, and Jake too, actually, Jake, do you think that the OCs over the years have been too rigid? Like, you talk about a democratic approach now with Reich, where it's like, all right, we're coming in, and even if our personnel doesn't fit what I'm trying to install, we're doing it anyway. Because I felt like that too many times with some of these OCs.
That, and also, I think a lot of years just completely lacked like authoritative voice to be able to push back when players were upset. And like, how many guys have the Jets had with a proven track record like Frank Reich, who's been a head coach twice? He's coordinated a bunch of successful offenses. I know he wasn't the play caller in Philly, but they won the Super Bowl, and he got a lot of credit for the development of Nick Foles that year, if you go back and look. So I just think players really respect him. I think he's a former quarterback. They obviously know about his resume as a player. So it's nice to have him, because I was someone, when they initially got rid of Tanner Engstrom, I said, how much of it was him? I mean, Justin Fields was the quarterback, but in a year where Aaron Glenn's trying to save his job, I'm sure he's thrilled that he has a proven professional that can handle the offensive side of the ball.
I think it's really important that they have an OC that sees the game through the quarterback's eyes. Now, I know Tanner Engstrom was a former quarterback. He played some quarterback in college, but the level of experience is night and day with him and Frank Reich. I mean, Tanner, and it wasn't all his fault. We know what he was dealing with at quarterback last year. It was a mess. So I get that. But he was, every situation for him last year was a new situation as a play caller. For Frank Reich, if they have 4-3 and outs in a row and nothing's working, he's been in that situation before. He knows what to do, either as an offensive coordinator or as the head coach. So he has the recall and he has the experience. And so I just think they're in much better hands with a guy who knows what he's doing and sees it through the quarterback's eyes. In today's NFL, I think that is so important.
Chad Pennington talked about that. He did an interview with Eric Allen on the Jets official podcast, and he said the same thing you're saying, Rich. So spot on there. Q&A here at the end of our show. Before we do that, a message from another one of our great sponsors, SeatGeek.
The Jets Collective is brought to you by SeatGeek. We are fired up for week one because we bought tickets to see the Jets take on the Titans in Nashville. And of course, we use SeatGeek to do it. SeatGeek makes it easy to find great deals for seats for any sport, any concert, festivals, and much more. With over 35 million downloads, it is the number one rated ticketing app on the market. I love using SeatGeek because every ticket's rated on a scale of 1 to 10, so you know if you're getting a good deal or if you're not getting a good deal. It's that easy. You just look for the green dots. Green means good. Red means bad. Use our code COLLECTIVE10 for 10% off your next set of tickets on SeatGeek. That's 10% off any tickets with promo code COLLECTIVE10. Click the link in the description to download the app and have the code added to your account. Thank you, SeatGeek, for sponsoring the Jets Collective.
Shout out to SeatGeek for making it happen. We'll be down there week one. And any other Jet game you want, use that code. Any concert, you name it, Yankees, Mets, whatever you want to purchase, Collective 10 will get you.
We got AC/DC coming to MetLife this year. I got to jump on the old geek and get some AC/DC.
The old band. Geek.
I got to see him. I haven't. That's like the only band. Rich, you know, I'm going to Rich because not Jake, not that you can't love AC/DC as well, but they're more our generation, right? That's like one of my favorite bands that I have yet to see. I've seen Guns N' Roses, Billy, the Eagles. I mean, Eminem, like I have got a Metallica. I've got to scratch AC/DC off the list here, and I'm going to.
Yeah, I'm not an AC/DC guy, but I respect the era, though. I respect the era that you're talking about.
Oh, wow. Surprising, Rich. All right. I got you.
I'm not a heavy metal guy. I'm not more of a middle-of-the-road guy. Like Beethoven, Rich. Eagles, Billy Joel. I mean, I've a bunch of times, you know.
Yeah. Billy's the best. Yep, got it.
Q&A at the end here. If you want your question answered, make sure you super chat it in. But first, shout out to Mimosa, longtime supporter of the Jets Collective. Gifted 10 memberships. So we're going to work on some membership perks over the summer here ahead of the season. But that is awesome. Mimosa, thank you for supporting the channel. It is certainly appreciated. M123 with a super chat. If Gino If Geno's out, does Aaron Glenn get a free pass on this year?
No.
All right, so let's say Geno doesn't play at all this year. Does Aaron Glenn, in your mind, get a pass, PT?
He should not. I do not believe that he will, nor do I believe that he should. No.
No such thing as a free pass in the NFL. I mean, it's look, as we've stated before, I mean, I think it's highly, highly unlikely that Geno's availability is affected. But the coach doesn't get a free pass.
The only time I could think of a coach sort of getting a free pass was when Rodgers went down and they kept Salah, but he still won 7 games and had an elite defense. So, like, the argument was, well, if you insert Rodgers into the team, surely they'll win more than 7 games if the defense remains elite, and we all know how that went.
Yeah, and listen, if you want to talk about free passes, and I'm with Richie on this, it doesn't exist in the NFL with the contract money and the pressure and all that stuff. It certainly can't be in year two. You want to tell me year one, maybe something happens that is, you know, out of your control, so detrimental. It's like, all right, we couldn't really get a good read on his ability to lead the team or run the building. That's one thing. Year two, not interested. No.
Medic with a super chat. Who's even to say Gino will be here next year when we draft a quarterback? Could have a better mentor. So this goes back to what we were talking about earlier in the show. Gino very well could just be here for just the year, and then they get a different veteran to oversee the development of whoever their top pick is in 27.
It could be a Josh McCown type situation, because you remember Josh was the starter in 17. And I actually thought he'd had a pretty decent year for him under John Morton, the OC that year. And then they went out and drafted Sam, but they brought back Josh McCown anyway. So, and he became the mentor. So I could see a scenario like that, provided that Geno plays well.
I would agree. I'm with you.
Windy City writes in, is it a bad time to pull the trigger on one of the veteran QBs that are still available, i.e. Cooper Rush? We mentioned Rush earlier. Are there any other veteran free agent quarterbacks at this stage that would garner interest if the Jets do have to explore adding another vet?
I mean, there's Josh Dobbs out there. I think if the Jets made a move, it would have to be someone who's currently on a roster. I think the Cooper Rush thing is, that ship has sailed. I would keep an eye on, like, the Philadelphia situation. They have a lot of quarterbacks there.
Andy Dalton knows Frank Reich, if you want to find a connection.
I mean, are they going to keep 4 quarterbacks, you know, on their roster? I don't know. I mean, they say they can do that, but that's a lot. So I would keep an eye on that situation. I think it would be more of a player who's on a roster.
Yeah. Yeah. I think I agree. But I understand, you know, the essence of the question there. Like, you don't want to be reactive here. And we all seem to be on the same page where we don't think that Geno's going to miss time. But, you know, what you don't want to have happen is have it drag out a little bit and the dearth of options that are currently out there get taken up. So it's almost what the proactive versus reactive. I don't know that it's an easy dance.
Yeah. Agree with you.
Tristan writes in, first time I disagree with B, he's not that good. This is in reference to Brendan Sorsby.
Oh, come on. How many times you watch him play? Who is that coming in from? Tristan?
Tristan Oliver.
Hey, Tristan, how many times you – I'm not saying you never watched him. What, once, twice? Come on. And by the way, I've only watched him play 2 or 3 times myself. It's more, you know, looking at the film and just understanding that, I mean, maybe just because I'm older than Tristan, there's so many things about Tristan I don't know. But when you need a quarterback, I'm just in the business of looking behind every door. And really, there's nothing else to say about Sorsby. It's old. Like, we're not going to talk about Sorsby anymore after the show. I mean, unless he goes play for the UFL or one of these half-ass leagues that's playing now. I don't even know what's playing right now. And he distinguishes himself very well. But he's not playing for Texas Tech. He's not playing in the NFL. And he's not going to be on the Jets. So I stand by what I said. I would have taken a swing. The Jets aren't. I respect it, even though I disagree with it.
Yeah, I was just looking at the comments. Chris BC mentioned Mason Rudolph. That's a good name, you know, they got they got 4 quarterbacks there. The 2, you know, they drafted Aller. They got the kid from Ohio State, Will Howard, from last year. And now they have Rudolph. And the other guy, Rodgers, you know, can't recall much about him, Aaron Rodgers. It still seems weird that he's playing, right? I mean, it just seems, God, I thought
God he'd bless be, him, man. God it's, bless it's, him.
Yeah, what the hell, right? He's going to make $15 million. I guess he's not ready to walk off and do Jeopardy full-time. But
I thought he was done. I thought it was a perfect way to go out. He won the division. He had a huge performance in the Sunday night game against the Ravens. It was a great moment. Okay, they got their ass kicked by an elite Texans defense in the playoff game. All right, you still won 10 games. I thought that was the perfect way to go out. I don't know how that's going to look with him and McCarthy this year.
That offense was tough to watch late. I feel like every game it was like, you know, 4 minutes ago, second quarter, Steelers have 3 points, 6 points. That was rough.
He was a dink and dunk quarterback last year.
Yep.
Dink and dunk.
Yep.
Possibly the last question. You know what? I got a couple more bookmarks that we could hit, but this one is a super chat from Doc. He goes, who do you guys think will be the odd man out of a crowded secondary? Granted, by the way, granted it's early, but no excuse for the secondary to be weak, given head coach equals Aaron Glenn. And they also, what bothered me, they retained Chris Harris, who was the secondary coach. He also was the interim DC after they fired Wilkes because Aaron Glenn is close with him. They didn't have an interception last year. We know Glenn is a DB who had 40-something picks as a player. The secondary better not just be an abomination. I think that'd be a terrible look for the head coach again.
Well, it would help a lot if the pass rush actually got going. If David Bailey is who they think he is, then they would have a supreme edge rusher, which would make life a lot easier for those cornerbacks. But right now, I don't know, by the odd man out, I mean, I can tell you, we have to submit our 53-man projection for ESPN like soon. And so I think the guys who are alive, I mean, obviously Stevens and Nashawn Wright, Azaria Thomas, and I think Quantez Stiggers will probably be your four corners. I think in the slot, you're going to have Brownlee and D'Angelo Pons. And at safety, I think you're going to have Fitzpatrick, Cisco, Belton, and Payne, B.J. Payne, the guy they just drafted. And,
Kansas.
Malachi Moore. So I think you'll probably have five safeties and six corners. So I just named 11 guys right there, I believe, to have in the secondary.
Good job, Rich. Look at him hammering home the depth chart.
Got my 53 all ready to go. Guaranteed I'll hit all 53 of them.
Yeah. 53 for 53. Last one here from Eddie, who says, Rich, is Frank Reich implementing newer elements into a system like Ben Johnson stuff? We talked about Seth Ryan last week coming over. So what have you heard about what Reich's offense will be implementing here?
They are. You know, they absolutely are. Seth Ryan has helped with that. A couple of Bill Musgrave, the quarterback coach, mentioned to us that they are putting in some Detroit wrinkles. I don't have any specifics for you. I think they are doing that. I think Frank, you know, I've done a lot of statistical study on what he's run the last few years. He's not a huge pre-snap motion guy. So I'm really curious to see if they kind of do an uptick on that, because that seems to be the trendy thing in the NFL now. Yeah. I think you want to probably look for more of that. Yeah. He has not been a big 12 personnel guy. Mostly his offenses are three wide receivers, 11 personnel. So to me, that's an easy change. I think, as I said before, I think you'll see more 12 personnel. He's a guy who, like I said, sees it through the quarterback's eyes. And so everything I think he does offensively will be try to put the quarterback in the best position possible. And the one thing that Olu Fashanu said that I thought was really interesting, how the different quarterback style affects their pass protection. With Justin Fields, he ran a lot. You never knew where he was going to be. The pocket was like always moving around. You never knew where he's going to be. Now you know where Geno's going to be. He's a straight drop back passer. And so the tackles have to be really on point with their outside rushes. That's something Olu mentioned that I thought was very interesting.
That is very interesting. And back to what you say about the pre-snap stuff. I need some eye candy here, man. I need some bot. Mister, let's go. People in motion, zooming in and out. I want the other team guessing. I want to see bodies flying with that pre-snap. So let's go, Frank. Incorporate it, buddy.
Love it. I totally agree with you, BT. Another episode of the Jets Collective is officially in the books. Rich, I know you're on vacation next week, so have the best time. BT and I will get together. We'll figure out if we're going to drop an episode on the channel. Either way, make sure you are subscribed. We will see you at Gangrene Beach Club on July 11th with Wayne Corbett. So make sure you get your tickets. BT, Rich, final words for the collective audience here.
Richie, what do you got?
Well, I'll miss you guys next week, but I just we're going away, and I just have to enjoy some family time. But I am really fired up for that Gangrene Beach Day, or whatever we're calling it down there in AC. Corbett is an awesome dude, and I know he loves talking to fans. And so I know that place. I've been to the Ocean's Resort. It's a really nice place. Looking forward to hanging out there with you guys and all the rest of them. So that I'm really fired up for that.
Yeah. Are you hitting the beach, Rich? Without divulging exactly where you're going, you guys, what kind of vacation are we doing?
Yeah, I'm going down to the beach, and then we'll be going back to the beach down in AC. So
love
I'm doing a lot of beach time. And hopefully there's not a lot of jet news while I'm off, but you never know. You never know. This is traditionally a quiet time, but as we found out this week, you just never know.
Yeah, and I could feel that. I don't know if you guys feel it, but I obviously echo what Rich just said about the event coming up July 11th. That'll be a lot of fun. Every episode we do, you know, before you know it, it's going to be 4th of July. Before you know it, I mean, it's camps here. And before you know it, instead of talking about what we think is going to happen, we're going to be reacting to what has already happened, which is a totally different energy for the show, one that I can't wait to experience. So I'm pumped up, man. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Thanks to everyone who tuned in. If you watch live, thank you. Click the like button, that thumbs up icon, whether you watch live or not. That helps the algorithm for YouTube feed this show to more Jet fans out there. Make sure you are subscribed to the channel. And again, if you ever miss it live, you can listen back on YouTube or, of course, wherever you get your podcast on Apple, Spotify, or iHeart. For Rich Cimini, Brandon Tierney, this is Jake Asmund saying thanks for watching the Jets Collective, and we'll talk to you next time.